Hello, grandkids, to Stunt Granny Audio 310. This is Kevin. On the other end is Chris. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, well, I could be doing better, but things could be worse also. So take things as they may. So, Good weekend of drinking has passed.
Yeah, how was the bachelor party?
It was very fun. Lots of tasty beer. Coming to a blog near you at some point when I get a free moment, which has been few and far between.
Fresh content for our readers. The sacrifices you make. You don't even like beer either. It's all for the readers.
Yeah. It's really tough. I mean, I even ordered $90 more worth of supplies to brew more beer. So, playing that. Dog has surgery again tomorrow, so that is a bummer. But we shall see. He seems to be okay now. He's made it through one surgery. We will hope for the best tomorrow.
Absolutely, everyone. I'm sure all of our thoughts are with you guys there.
Poor puppy Cayenne. So, we just watched poor puppy Alex get booted off of Tough Enough. And then, because you were delaying the recording of the show until after Tough Enough talk, I was like, oh, well, I may as well watch that too. It was quite amusing when the lady came up and she goes, isn't Tough Enough over? Didn't you watch that already? I'm like, well, I'm watching the after show. And she's like, more wrestling?
Oh, man. Oh, she knows what she's marrying into.
So, that was kind of funny. Maybe did not hear the last 10 minutes or so. Of the Tough Enough talk. It was a lot of fun, though. Everyone, in general, seems a lot looser.
Oh, yeah.
And it also made, like, the way even the competitors acted to each other on the stage made the previous segments, to me, seem way more set up than they should be.
Yeah,
you know, because was it Diana and Daria are the two that really don't like each other?
Yeah, no, yeah, they are. They get quite catty with each other in the house and on the stage. And
well, and that I guess that was the thing is that they still didn't really like each other, but I didn't think that they acted quite as angrily on stage as they did in the house.
Yeah, no. And if you think, you know, and maybe on stage they're more conscientious about, you know, how they come off them than when they're in the house, and maybe, you know, once again, you know, how real is any reality television show as far as, you know, you know, do you ever really forget the camera's there and, you know, just completely lose yourself? or is there always some part of you that's playing the camera or even being, you know, directed to act this way?
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I even kind of liked some of... Well, they got the... It seemed like all of the contestants there on Talk Tough.
Yeah. I make sure they get everyone, even if it is to tell the people who blend into the background during the main show, you know, step it up. But of course, you know, they're only showing us with the clips from the week. They're only showing us what they want. It's edited the way they want. So who knows what, you know, Sarah and Amanda are showing. You know, that ends up on the cutting room floor. So. You almost can't totally judge it from that. But no, I think I did enjoy this week's episode better than the first. And, I mean, actual tough enough. I thought Hulk Hogan was way more comfortable this week. I thought he he's always kind of, you know, concerned about his image and whatnot. So maybe he was a little cautious last week, but this week he was more forceful with his opinions, and I think it made for a better show from him. And he was kind of getting into the spirit of things on Tough Talk as well. So I think overall I enjoyed this week.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly can have an opinion on anything, any aspect of the business with a large degree of authority. It's just like, he doesn't need to be the bad guy per se, but I mean, he does need a little bad guy, and I think he showed that this week too.
Yeah, he definitely did. I thought Brian kind of backed off on, you know, he was pretty harsh, like with the musclehead guys. He even tried to defend Alex, who now just kind of blatantly said that I don't want to learn about the history of this business. It's like, you'd think Brian would have maybe been as angry as anyone was, but, you know, Brian kind of let him slide on that, and Hulk was the one who just really slammed him on it, and probably was a big, huge part of the reason why he got sent home.
I don't think his, how can I forget what he said?
Yeah, knowledge means nothing. Yeah, that's going to end up on that guy's tombstone one day. Yeah.
That's just a brutal line, like, and then, you know, his explanation didn't really make sense when he tried to explain himself.
Yeah, it got to the point where he buried himself enough. I think that a lot of people were just thinking, let's not ruin this whole guy's life over one dumb comment on a TV show.
Yeah, I do think that this will have an overblown stature in the wrestling world. But it was a pretty rough statement.
Yeah, definitely, because you could just take it so many different ways.
And he didn't he was one of the guys that only made it to the boat, or he didn't even make it to the boat.
Yeah, no, he had difficulties, or just does not complain. No, well, I know Patrick straight up said he didn't know how to swim.
Right.
So that, I guess, it's a little gutsy, but maybe kind of dumb, and well, on the part of the show, that challenge was potentially dangerous in a lot of ways. Lucky that didn't go more sideways than it did.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised, because I'm sure that you can somewhat limit the amount of large creatures coming into an area.
Yeah, I think, but, I mean, I'm sure that one gator was just for show, and they probably had, you know, someone with a, you know, with a tranquilizer dart, you know, like 50 feet away or something. But I mean, just in general, like, not everyone does know how to swim, so, and it didn't seem like they ever bothered to ask who knew how to swim and who didn't before they threw them in the water.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is, but every time I hear that, I guess I go, how the fuck do you not know how to swim? Like, it's just, that is always a little strange to me, to be completely honest. It's just like, I don't get that at all. Like, you just learn, right?
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, I guess I really learned at a young age, so I always assumed that everybody learned.
I tried and failed, yes, at a young age, and got afraid of the water to the point where I can't, even in a 4 foot deep pool, I can't put my head underwater. It's just, it's an irrational fear of mine.
Okay. Well, yeah, my fears are pretty limited. I'm kind of dumb in that department. Yeah, I think my parents tossed me in when I was pretty young, and I was okay with it, so I've been okay with it ever since. So that's the one thing. Like, I guess I'm always surprised at the number of people that, because it always seems like there's some type of a swimming challenge in any of these, physical type shows, whether it's Survivor
Well,
or.
yeah, Survivor, I don't think anyone should ever, apply for if you if swimming isn't your strong suit. Although I think that if, I mean, was laid out, without thinking, there's gonna be a swim competition here.
Yeah, so the show moved along from that point, and they had the flatback competition after that.
Yeah, that was another one that was like competition. Do they really be going to the top at all? But I mean, they were in the beginners ring, but I believe more like a trampoline. I believe that that is what they really do put the first day students that they recruit from football or amateur wrestling or what have you. That's the ring that they put them in, the essentially the trampoline ring. So I guess it
Right.
wasn't that big of a deal, but it was definitely still something that surprised me a little bit that they went to the top rope already. But then again, I don't know what kind of training they're doing, off camera, or because during Tough Talk, when Fairly and Georgia, I think it was, got into it, Georgia referenced, all these drills, these in-ring drills they do with that we haven't seen yet. So I guess there's, in-ring training that, that we're not privy to at this point.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I must have missed that little part. But
Which I guess
it's
makes sense, does it?
yeah, I mean, they're showing us, because that's the one thing I guess I noticed more about this week's show than last week's. I just felt like they did a lot of I felt like it was half on stage stuff and half the challenges.
Yeah, I would not mind if they cut the, out of ring challenges out of the show entirely and just. It was 50 to 75%, the in-ring training, and then 25 to 50%, house drama. I don't think that the quote unquote, endurance, bravery, whatever challenges really add much to the show. I mean,
Yeah.
I guess it has maybe a little entertainment, value, but in the end of the day, it
Well,
should
I
be balanced with
guess
the nerdiness what matters.
I'm more the mindset. It's just like, why can't it be something in ring-ish that is your competition? Like, there's enough stuff for them to do. 'Cause even last week was the competition with the body slam in the bag. I guess would be an example of it. Like, you can s understand the doing that with a dummy to make sure you get the slam right.
I have no problem with any of the in-ring competitions. I think the show should be way more about that than, swimming through alligator-infested
Oh,
water.
and I guess, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm th yeah, 'cause they spl I guess they did split it the same way last week.
Yeah,
Because it was a
it's
climb to the top of the thing and then the
then the in-ring, then
yeah,
in
then the
between all
in-ring.
the house drama, and then
Yeah.
the last step where.
Yep, I'm just an idiot. That's all.
It's kind of, and I guess my thought of it is it could be more. You could get rid of the challenges part, and then just focus on in the ring, the house drama, and then the closing. The selection of the final three and the vote and all that. I think you could do away with the challenges, but obviously that's not what's going to happen. That's not what the show is. They've obviously already got their format, and they're I'm sure they're not going to deviate from it at this point.
Yeah, and I definitely do not think that any of the judges are going to go out of their way to save anyone in the near future. Like, I would, if I were any of the judges, that gets saved. Like, I don't think anyone's, even though they've had more people kind of pop up personality-wise, or at least they've featured more people personality-wise, like, I think ZZ and Patrick have gotten a lot of personality time on the camera. Hold on, where was I going with that? Oh, like, well, most of the guys, just in general, though, I guess to me as a judge, I wouldn't, you know, I don't know anyone well enough to want to save them at this point. And I think that's kind of the problem at the beginning of any event that, or any show that does this. I mean, if you get cut within these first couple of weeks, there's no chance of you being saved.
Yeah, no. I mean, and it's basically for a conclusion that they're going to say no at this point. I mean, although I think the whole the voting process is weird. They throw it to commercial. They start the, you know, the voting, like, immediately. Then they come back when the vast majority of people have already voted, and then they do their 30-second, you know, save for themselves when most everyone's already voted, and then the judges get asked if they're going to use their save after the votes are already in. So it's formatted weird to me.
Gotcha. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense in a logic way. You would think they'd try to save themselves, go to commercial for the vote.
Yeah.
And then it wouldn't... I understand waiting to have the saves until later, because why use the save if the person's safe? I mean, yeah, one of the three people is going to be safe.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it was pretty obvious that, you know, that Alex was going to go this week. You know, from the start, the whole episode was very much building to it. You know, from the first 5 minutes, he hit his infamous line, and from that point on, there was no way anyone else was going home. You know, and with Sarah Lee, I think that they pulled the trick with her where they want you to vote for her. Like, it was easy last week. It's that, no. That psychological thing of, and they do it in, like, a lot of reality shows, competition shows, where the judges will put someone they really like in the bottom, so that the judges and the producers, I should say, put someone they really like in the bottom three, so a fan base, you know, rallies around them to keep them going longer.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't watch too many of those shows, but I do watch one, actually. And I do feel like they do that from time to time. You know, and it does seem to spark a fire more times than not. yeah, they did kind of keep on saying that she was better than being a lackey.
Actually, Sarah Lee isn't the one who was the lackey. It was, I wish I remembered these girls' names off the top of my head. Gina, Gita, or something like that, was the one who was Daria's, you know, lackey and kind of picking on Diana. Sarah Lee's hasn't shown. Sarah Lee's the one who's been very, very the most in the background, but she also seems like she might be the nicest girl there, so, and most, you know, normal girl there, so, yeah, so, I think that they want her, they probably do want her to go far and just start showing more, so I think it was definitely an attempt to, you know, rally people behind her and get her to, you know, that kick in the keister.
Yeah, she could use it. She needs a little more personality, too. Just, you know, just saying you're happy to be there, you need a little more pizzazz than that.
Yeah, you absolutely do. I don't really really see her. I don't really see her winning. I see her giving more of a shot, but I don't see her winning. Actually, of the girls, even the ones that are showing personality, I'm not sure if it's good personality. I don't really see a front runner in any way in the girl. But I don't what maybe I wouldn't say. Either side, as a girl, man, the girls are just none of them are connecting with the viewers at all. And meanwhile, on the guy side, maybe there's not a front runner. You've got ZZ, you got Patrick, you got, you know, the guy
isn't Tanner. Yeah, well, those.
The problem that it's still, you know, I'm still starting to name.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the tough part at the beginning of any show, really. I always feel like the easiest people get picked off anyway. You know, and they've kind of gotten picked off already. And the guy, right, like, ZZ, you can already tell that the coaches kind of love him because of his personality, too, because he's, like, one of the few guys that seems like a real character.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? He's got a lot to him, and he's got, like, a lot of personality to him. Like, and that's a very important part. He can lose weight. The other guys in the competition can't gain charisma. You either have it or you don't.
Right. And, yeah, of the guys, him and Patrick stand out the most in that department. But, yeah, obviously. Patrick's probably, you know, in a lot better shape than ZZ.
Yeah. Patrick shows a lot. It was probably good for Tanner to lose two competitions. After smoking everyone last week, I think he probably used a little bit more humbleness.
And I always feel like that's a staple of a reality TV show too. The guy or gal who comes out blazing hot ends up finding some dusty trail to muck everything up.
Yeah, and unfortunately for him, that dusty trail might end up is the actual, you know, in ring stuff. So we'll see how he and all of them, you know, work out through the rest of the season.
Right. So yeah, I mean, things are kind of preliminary at this moment for this show. You know, like you said, there's not a real finger to put on anyone to win for the most part.
Yeah, it's only week two. I shouldn't even be, you know, talking about front runners yet.
So, you know, Stunt Granny was one of the front runners for the demise of TNA.
Oh, we've been waiting on this for years. I believe I believe you already scheduled Dusty Gibbings' return to audio the day after the last TNA show ever.
Yeah, we are in negotiations with one Dusty Gibbings for him to come back. He's expecting top dollar, just like Jeff Jarrett's giving out in Global Force Wrestling. Which... When we talked last week, you were talking about, we had mentioned a big announcement coming from TNA. And, I don't feel like that shoe has dropped necessarily. Did you know about this silliness with Jeff Jarrett on the show? Because I guess I didn't read the spoilers, so I watched Impact this week and I went, why is Jeff Jarrett here? Why are you letting him promote another wrestling organization?
Yeah.
Why are you letting him present another wrestling organization that has literally poached some of your talent recently?
that's the thing. Maybe he didn't poach them. It's all gonna, it could all be a part of an invasion angle, where TNA's own guys are gonna be invading TNA.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. It doesn't make any sense on any end. Like, if that's what the plan is, then not only is Dixie Carter dumb, Jeff Jarrett's even dumber than I thought he was.
Oh, that's brutal. But I don't see where this benefits anyone. I mean, and all indications are this is not some long-range plan where TNA is going to go away and Global Force is going to take over, and including take over the Destination America time slot. Destination America had no idea this was happening. You know, Dixie essentially worked her own TV network, tried to work her own TV network again. They're not happy with this at all. So there any thought that this was a deal where, you know, there was going to be some kind of a buyout, or and Jarrett was taking over, and at this very moment, there is no wrestling show going to be, neither will TNA be continuing, nor will any wrestling show, except for maybe ROH, be taking its place in that in July. Global Force and TNA, that actually somehow so I don't know how you're gonna work an invasion angle when, you know, one person's in TV and the other TV when TNA's, you know, taping, which will essentially be its final 6 weeks, essentially. And then Jared's taping his, you know, 12 weeks of TV just to try and sell as a pilot to somebody, although there doesn't appear to be any interest anywhere, so
yeah,
I guess, you know what, it will be fitting to see Dixie and Jeff go down together.
I mean, I just don't even get it. Like, Jarrett literally has done nothing for years and just had this brand. Like, I don't know who gave him money, but they should feel embarrassed for themselves. Toby Keith should be embarrassed at himself for being friends with Jeff Jarrett. Because it's just this dumb con, and it's just like, why would any TV executive be enamored with him when he started all of this failure that's wreaked havoc all over the wrestling community for the last 10 plus years?
Yeah, there's just, and there's nothing to the Global Force brand. I mean, they did this big, not even a big press conference, but they did a press conference where they dragged out Chael Sonnen and announced him to be a part of their announced team with no contract, by the way. To this day, there is no actual signed contract that Chael Sonnen is going to be at their tapings to do commentary. And I'm sure that Jeff also hoped that Jim Ross would join Chael Sonnen, which is, you know, Jim Ross is too smart to, you know, join up with this venture as long as they don't actually have a TV contract written in stone.
Yeah, JR's mama did not raise no dummy. So,
yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's been all, I mean, it's literally been hot air for 3 years. I'm like, this is one where I'm like, how does this even garner any type of attention? Like, it's been nothing for so long.
It still is nothing. I mean, I've seen nothing that says that Jeff Jarrett has any new ideas to bring to the table. I don't believe he has any real talent attached to him. I mean, he was utilizing the Young Bucks as, you know, essentially the main eventers of his, you know, ballpark shows that he did a few weeks back. You know, their New Japan contracted talent that's, you know, that works in ROH. So he's got nothing. I mean, he's got nothing on the talent. So it'd just be using, you know, whatever indie guys are willing to go with him, plus the TNA talent that has just, plus whatever TNA talent that would go with him that's just been beaten out and beaten down and beaten down until they mean nothing.
Yeah, I mean, they're just taking a paycheck.
The wrestling business is better off of. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's not, it's just like, whatever. You know, I can do even less and get a paycheck. Like that.
Right. I mean, this is. Both Dixie Carter and Jeff Jarrett just need to go away. The wrestling business is better off without them. And I do hope that Destination America does. I don't want to see them get rid of wrestling, or I don't want there to be less wrestling on TV, so I do hope that, I actually do hope that they can make some sort of investment in ROH and, you know, maybe give them 2 hours on Wednesday. You don't need a 3-hour block of wrestling, just, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that ROH is just big enough that they could probably pull off a 2-hour show. Because there are a lot of times where the same talent is not on back-to-back shows. Right. And especially if they started to give them more money to stick around instead of going to Japan so damn much. Which is, to me, always been one of their problems. You know, I don't mind them farming them out to Japan, but it just seems like it screws with their storylines too often.
Yeah, it definitely can when they go on those longer tours of Japan. But yeah, so you know, hopefully that, you know, because, you know, for all of its issues, ROH does have a lot of new talent. They've always tried to be, creative in their booking, even if it doesn't hit the mark, they at least have, you know, attempt new things. You know, it's, I mean, sometimes in more of a Back to the Future type scenario where it is more about, you know, the in-ring competition, and as it's in the name, honor, you know, feuds over, you know, championships, you know, and, you know, championships, revenge, you know, the main, you know, story, you know, the usual main thing that drives stories, the ridiculous, you know, soap opera schlock.
Right. Yeah, and that was kind of funny. I thought about it after last week's show that I completely forgot to bring up the topic of Jay Lethal becoming the new ROH champion. And I was not sure whether to read sarcasm or a serious ready to debate about the Jay Lethal versus Jay Briscoe situation.
I like Jay Lethal. I've always liked Jay Lethal. I think that, hey, he's worth trying out. He's worth trying out as a champion, and they're going to do something somewhat, you know, different with it, with the whole, well, he's going to hold both belts, and, you know, and he has to defend both of them possibly in the same night. I think that adds something to it. I mean, do I think that as someone I want as my franchise player on national TV, Jay Lethal versus Jay Briscoe. I mean, Jay Lethal does not win that battle, but it's not like Jay Briscoe's going away and he'll never win the championship again either.
Okay. I can buy that. I'm still not a fan. I guess, to me, Lethal kind of was one of those guys that was off TV for a while. And when you're the TV champ, that doesn't float for me all that well. But even then, I don't feel like they treated him this seriously until very recently. Which is kind of
I haven't watching ROH TV until they came on Destination America, so I will absolutely bend to you on that one.
Yeah, so I think that's part of it. I still think that he's just, like, it's kind of weird to stay, but I think he still needs to find his own voice. Like, I know that that guy's been around for a long time, but he still feels like he's playing wrestler to me, rather than, you know, him feeling like a legitimate champion. I don't know if it takes getting rid of that hack, Truth Martini, or if it's just kind of something in him that just, to me, still feels like, you know, he's still the fake Macho King and everything. Like, maybe I'm just having a hard time separating him from that.
Right. I mean, I can understand it. Actually, right now, my bigger issue right now and for ROH is Roderick Strong being the number one contender. Because I think that Lethal can be a good champion, but as good as, you know, Roddy can be in the ring, he's just the guy who never left ROH. And just there's something to that to me. That's just, he's been there, you know, since almost as close to the beginning. He's the only guy who never even really never made a serious attempt to leave and go elsewhere, or wasn't ever selected to have a take a chance elsewhere. So it's just, and there's a reason for that. He's just a very bland guy who happens to be, you know, on his best day, excellent in the ring. I mean, I love the match he had with Nakamura, but same time, it was odd that, you know, it makes you question, you know, when the decision to go with him as the number one contender was made, because, you know, they had that match with him and Nakamura in the can for a little while, and then, you know, that obviously Strong loss, and instead now he's the number one contender.
Yeah, but they've definitely been building for him to have his kind of comeback here. And they've been building it for a while, so I'm not surprised by it. I guess I didn't realize that match with Nakamura had been taped a bit back. But that's the other thing that really, if Destination America gave them any money, they would have to tell them to tape more shows.
Yeah.
The road rage stuff does not help make their product feel like, well, your typical wrestling show.
Correct, yeah. And actually, that stuff like that is fine for, you know, they're, you know, it'd be fine to do, to, you know, they should absolutely keep their hour-long syndicated show.
Right.
You know, maybe keep it, you know, the way it is, or, you know, maybe even do more road rage stuff, just to make it something different. But for the show that's gonna, you know, that it's potentially get 2 hours on, you know, on a cable network, no more shows in dimly lit arenas, like the road rage shows. Yeah, you know, you do everything at your tapings locations with, you know, with the lighting grade, and, you know, as you know, making it look as good as possible without getting into the ECW Paul Heyman situation where you're just putting so much into these production expenses, you know, at the demand of the network that the network isn't paying for.
Hopefully they aren't. I mean, I don't think that they could go to bigger arenas, but if they lit the arenas better, it would help. Because I feel like when they go to some of the bigger places, what's the one in Poughkeepsie there? Where Raw used to tape, is it Poughkeepsie? It's in New...
The New York cities?
Yeah.
Hammerstein. Well, they don't go to Hammerstein anymore. They do Terminal 5 or whatever it is.
Oh, well, they did do one somewhat recently at Terminal 5, or at, what was the, oh, shit. We just both said it. Hammerstein Ballroom.
Hammerstein, yeah.
But I feel like I had seen a show there within the last year, so I guess that's why I was thinking about that. But when they record there...
You're thinking of TNA. TNA did tape, like, months and months of TV at Hammerstein last year. And, of course, Santa's on Spike. And even, I think, the beginning of Destination America as well.
Okay. Now I'm going to have to look this up, because I swear they've been there since I've been watching. But I just felt like... you know, when they were at some of the places that are a little more famous, they put a little more production into it, and it wasn't nearly as dark, I guess, is the point that I'm kind of getting around
right,
to.
Right, yeah.
So, I don't think it would take that much more, honestly, for, you know, I mean, they're only doing 3,000 to 5,000 seat venues. It's not like it's a huge place. A couple of more lights will... do the trick.
Right, yeah. And I do believe they do have a new lighting grid that they haven't already debuted it. They're going to debut it imminently.
So, yeah.
So they are upgrading their production. And, you know, if they're given that call in September to have an exclusive, you know, 2-hour show on Destination America, yeah. Hopefully they'll be ready for it.
Yeah, and you know what? On Raw this week, the censors were ready. They were ready when Cesaro gave the brass ring salute to John Cena in their fine match this past Monday night.
Yeah. They were definitely trigger happy. They kind of jumped the gun, which I completely understand. I mean, because who sticks up any other finger but those with that finger?
Yeah. I do not. Yeah, it's easy in the heat of the moment to go, "Oh my God, those are his middle fingers," and to hit the censor button. And Jeremy just sent me an instant message that said, "Watching Tough Enough, is anyone likable on this show?"
And Jeremy just hit the nail on the head with the other problem with Tough Enough. Well, other than ZZ, I can't say I'm that impressed with any of them. They like a little...
Okay, we're gonna leave that one. Jeremy is questioning ZZ's mental capabilities, let's say.
Oh boy.
Oh man, okay. Well, I do have to question Cesaro's mental capabilities in this one, too, in this incident. And I mean, okay, I get that he was doing it with Tyson Kidd. I don't ever remember seeing it or hearing it explained before reading this one article on what is this? Oh, SB Nation.
Cage Side Seats.
Yeah, Cage Side Seats.
Yeah. It's, I've never heard of it before. I've never seen them do it. It's never been explained to me that it was something that they did. So.
Yeah,
Cesaro was absolutely wrestling that entire match, and you know, you know, dedicating an entire match to Kid, so I guess I understand if that's one of their things that, you know, he wanted to throw it in the match, but yeah, common sense should have told him, yet on camera, what this is going to look like, and I mean, the only people who could really see what he was really doing were John Cena and the referee.
Yeah, so, I mean, I do hope that, honestly, I didn't think anything of the blip. I did notice it. I just figured that the production sucked at that point, so whatever. Like, it was so short.
Yeah, it's not a big deal, I don't think. I mean, what are they going to do? Take away his one-night push again?
Well, yeah, and that's the one thing that just drives me bananas about him. I watched that match, and everyone, like, he goes for the Cesaro swing, and people go bananas. And, you know, they seem to love all of his matches and how he connects with them in the ring. I just don't get how they don't get that. Like, it's just so weird to me.
I don't get it either. I mean, he's not the most dynamic guy on the microphone, but yeah, I think he does have a dry wit about him that maybe someone like Vince McMahon, who obviously enjoys, you know, blunt object over your head type comedy, doesn't get. But yeah, he's absolutely been underutilized. It's a shame, you know, what happened to Tyson Kidd, because they really did have something going with the team. But you know, hopefully last night he opened some eyes, and they don't, with his performance, and they don't hold his little two-finger salute against him.
Right. Yeah, especially since a lot of people honestly will not question what happened during that little blip. And probably even less saw this article, but
yeah. Right.
Other than, I mean, is there anything more to say about that match? I mean, if that wasn't the highlight of Raw, I'm not quite sure that you watched the same show that I did.
Oh, no, of course, that was absolutely the highlight. It was a great TV match. Just everything played perfectly, including, you know, Kevin Owens' role. It was probably the best DQ on a WWE TV in months and months, as far as it making sense and driving a story instead of just being a lazy way to get out of a match.
Right. Yeah, it was laid out really well. Owens was great on the headset. It helped to kind of have the 2-and-2 with JBL side with Owens and Saxton and Cole kind of badgering both of them.
Yeah, and that was so not a fair fight.
Oh, man. No, it wasn't. But at least they put up a fight. Like, I guess there are so many times where I'm like, oh my god, why aren't the babyface announcers putting up a fight? At least they put up a fight this week.
I can't say that I remember anything Cole or Saxton said.
Okay. Oh, him and his Jeremys. It's always a problem. I'm trying to figure out what he's saying about Tanner here. But anywho, I'm trying to think if there was anything, and I need to go to my Almost Live and Definitely Half-Assed review of Raw. Which evidently was a little too, I don't know. I'm not completely sure what made Shahid think that you had written this instead of me.
Why would I have no clue why he would think that.
And I'm not quite sure what that means about what I wrote during the show, because I mean, I guess just nothing really connected with me, and I'm not gonna sit there and pretend like, oh yeah, that was really funny. Like I was talking to Jeremy about it actually earlier today. Like I understood where Shahid was coming from about how over the top the whole opening segment was, but it just didn't connect with me. You know, like I. Yeah, they went from small present to bigger present to, you know, biggest present. And, you know, they're showcasing the price. It just felt like commercial, commercial,
Hey, I'm
commercial.
just happy after years of TNA presenting, essentially presenting their all their wrestlers as paupers that the wrestling promotion actually decided to portray their world champion as being wealthy.
Okay. Yeah. There are arguments to be had about how this this segment went. and that's one of those good points to bring up.
Yeah, that's why I'm here.
I still continue to have no idea why The Miz is in this three-way feud. That was the next two segments of the show. Yeah, so we agree on that one. Paige and Alicia Fox takes on Alicia Fox.
I don't have no memory of that match or how it finished.
So, the only positive for me that came out of this was if the WWE, if you forgot everything that happened before this feud started, this feud makes sense. They're isolating Paige, they're extra women going against her in this quest to knock down the Divas. And the two people who make the most sense aren't willing to join you. So, I mean, at least from that standpoint, they've done an okay job. But I still feel like they don't know where it's leading.
I don't think they have any idea where this is leading. And apparently Paige doesn't really need any help because she won the match, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was against Lackey Alicia Fox. It was a little bit of a weaker win, which was weird, considering how strong overall Paige has been made to look. And even with wins over Alicia Fox in the past. But yeah, I mean, that to me is there. Bray Wyatt. You know, what more can you say? It still is. He's just too kind of weird and art house for me to really kind of get behind.
Yeah, I was one of the. I think I was one of the first people who used the phrase art house to describe it. I mean, I guess at least he's made a clear motivation is or clear objective. Because I'm not sure. I still don't know if I understand his motivation for anything. But at least his objective is to ruin Roman Reigns' life and make sure that he essentially never wins again. Never wins a big match again. Okay, let's go with that. Fine.
I mean, we had a time filler with the with all the tag teams, That was what it was. And then, could you be proven wrong, Chris? Is Lana now ready for in-ring action now that she's gotten into her first official cat fight?
Oh, man, that whole segment. Oh, man, could Ziggler and Lana come off as just worse human beings? More unlikable than anyone on Tough Enough during that whole segment. Ugh. It was brutal. I mean, if all this is for Rusev to be a gigantic baby face, then they're doing a great job.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, like, Lana clearly sounds like she's just throwing Rusev under the bus right now. And they kind of... I mean, Ziggler admitted what it was up front, which I think is a fine turn of events, but it doesn't mean it makes him likable either.
Yeah, no. And then following it up with threatening violence against a one-legged man, you know would whip your ass in a fair fight. That's just pathetic.
Yeah, so there was definitely nothing likable about my boy, but, you know, kind of the funny thing is, I do think that Jeremy and I have mentioned, that he would work better as a heel. I'm not sure that Rusev would work better as a face. But somehow if they get, Ziggler back to the heel ledger, I would not be disappointed, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I think that, you know what, maybe a double turn is the best case scenario, since apparently they're not going backwards or having, you know, Lana and Rusev end up back together as part of some ruse.
Yeah, I think the introduction of Summer Rae into this thing kind of kills that off, although, I mean, they've done things of that nature before. Or at least I feel like they have, but I just don't feel like
I guess in wrestling you can redact anything if you want to, but it doesn't seem like that's what they're doing here. Even though the best scenario would be to build a time machine and go back to WrestleMania and never ever tease any kind of sort of dissension between Lana and Rusev.
Oh yeah. So there was that. Neville fought Sheamus again. I guess it's just to prove that Sheamus can win. I don't know why you can't have Sheamus beat somebody else other than Neville. I understand you want him on TV. It was a good match. But I'm not sure it does a whole lot of good for either of them.
Yeah, it was just a match. It was just a match to get them both on TV, actually, you know, give Sheamus a win, have Neville look good at defeat. Yeah, it was just a match. It was nothing much to talk about it.
Right. And yeah, King Barrett still has a place on the roster. Same with Jack Swagger, which I was surprised by, just because I don't feel like I've seen him in forever.
Yeah. He was brought back to TV to be the setup guy for a match between Barrett and R-Truth. Yeah, that's just... Ugh.
Yep.
If that's not on the path of your future endeavor, I don't know what is.
Yeah, you cannot be feeling good about your prospects when you're below the pecking order of R-Truth.
Right, indeed.
And then, yeah, the main event to me seemed like a foregone conclusion that Bray Wyatt was going to interfere, and sure enough, he interfered in the Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins and Kane matchup.
Yeah, the entire main event went very. It was what it was. It was paint by numbers. Essentially, what it almost really was what it should have been. You could argue whether or not it was done as well as it could have been, but you know, you needed to establish that Bray Wyatt is out to ruin Roman Reigns' life, and that no one man can stop a United Authority, not even Brock Lesnar. So. Yes, you could check out those two objectives. The main event subject was a success.
Right. I agree with you. Like, from a storyline perspective, it makes sense. Again, doesn't kind of make it any more engaging to me. You got to point out the positives if you're still going to say that it just kind of sat there for you.
Yeah, I mean, they've done the same tag match at least 5 times in the last, 6 weeks, so. Or something like that. Maybe it's only been 3 and it felt like 5, but I've certainly seen
this
match before.
Oh, man. Well, we are at the end of our time, sir. So I think that was the end of Raw. I think that makes a good stopping point for the end of the show. The beer of the show, Dark Horse, Sapient Trip Ale, a fine triple ale from up in Marshall, Michigan. I believe it was a show beer for Opa a little bit back, but I bought a 6-pack, so I'm having it again.
Excellent.
So, for at Chris Calamita, at DeFrango11, and at Stunt Granny, kids, have a good evening.